Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Zuma JD interview number 8. I'm Zuma JD, bringing you another exclusive guest. Ash Drake is one of the real OGs. Crypto has taken this man on a journey in which he has learnt many important lessons about life. This is going to be one of the most personal interviews I've done yet, and I've been so excited to bring it to you. Ash Drake, welcome to the Zuma JD interviews. How you going?
Thank you, my friend. I am fine. I'm happy to be here.
Awesome. So I think a good first question for those who know nothing about you, because you were away for quite a while. A lot of people have entered the space since your heyday. So what does it mean to be Ash Draked, and what is the Ash Drake effect?
As far as I've seen on the internet, which I will have to add is not quite true in the end, but being Ash Drake means shorting the Bitcoin while Bitcoin keeps going up and basically getting wiped out.
Right. So I'll just add a little bit more context. For those who don't know you, you were, at least in my opinion, definitely one of the crypto trader OGs, or at least one of the OGs on crypto Twitter. Years and years ago. Yeah, very famously, you shorted Bitcoin until you lost a lot of money. So maybe tell us a little bit about how you got into crypto.
So this might be like a funny story. And I don't know, for me it's funny. So I was in the cinema in like December of 2013. And I was watching The Wolf of on Wall Street, the movie. And I was like, no, man, these people can't be this retarded. I mean, what the hell? And as soon as I got home, I actually Googled penny stocks, or how to trade penny stocks or something like that, or pump and dumps. And an article came up with Bitcoin,
right,
which was like, look, it was $100 and now it's like $1,000. This is the ultimate pump and dump. And I was like, shit, man, I gotta get into this. So I took like, I think I had like $1,000 or something. And I got into Bitcoin while it was going down at like 700. And then I saw all the altcoins and I was like, man, this cannot happen, you know, this is dumb. But it was actually when I saw like the Dogecoin, I was like on board on the Dogecoin train. I was like, no, man, this is not real. This is the true Wild West.
So initially when you got into crypto, were you buying coins or did you start shorting from the start?
No, I was buying coins. I didn't know anything about shorting, man. I had zero, absolutely zero experience with the stock market.
Okay, so you started off with Bitcoin, then you got into Dogecoin.
Yeah, and all the other alts.
And this was around, you said, 2013?
Yes, 2000, late 2013, that period.
Yeah. That makes sense.
January 2014, something around those lines, because the movie was released in January or something,
right,
in December or something. So basically right immediately after that.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because that is the most unique entry into crypto I've heard, that you were inspired by Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah.
And so at what point did you go from buying Bitcoin and altcoins and deciding to, you know, mix things up and try shorting?
Well, if you remember back in the day, basically it was like the crazy Wild West. I mean, compared to right now, it was a lot more crazier. But the thing that happened was the price kept going down. And I was like, well, I can't make money buying this. So how can I make money on this if it keeps going down? And then I was like, I actually Googled how to make money while something goes down.
and that's how you found shorting. And that's the same for me, to be fair. That's exactly the same as I found out about shorting. Or I think maybe I said to someone, how can you make money when the price goes down? And they said, oh, try going short. And I'm like, what the hell does that mean? And I looked up shorting, and then I was like, okay, this makes sense. I want to talk a little bit about, you know, how the platforms have changed over time. Yeah, was the first place you went short Bitfinex, or did you try somewhere else?
No, so first it was Bitfinex, because it was like the first one that allowed you to actually short Bitcoin. And it was a wild west with those swings. Like 3x, it was relatively to the value of the Bitcoin at that time, it was huge. But then, if you remember, or if not, in around March, April, or May, around that time, the Chinese exchanges, before Bitcoin was banned in China, or the Bitcoin exchanges were banned in China, there were those Chinese exchanges like BTC China, Huobi, and the OKCoin.
Yeah.
OKCoin, I think, was the first one that released futures, quarterlies. And oh man, those were the good old days. I mean, like somebody offering you 10x, 20x on the futures, it was unheard of. I mean, in crypto space, it was unheard of. People that came from like Forex or something might have had an idea of where the platforms would go, you know. But for us, which basically went like, oh, let's buy a meme coin, and now we can short with 20x. This sounds like degenerate gambling.
Yeah, I think you're right, man. I can remember these times too. I think as well, as you were saying before, the prices, I mean, cryptocurrency is still volatile now, but back in 2013, I think things were even more volatile back then, and just trading on spot was crazy enough, you know.
Yes. The 2014, I think I've said this on Twitter, and I think it's actually quite true. So in 2013, Bitcoin and the entire crypto space was like the internet at the dot-com
bubble.
The dot-com bubble, yeah. Like, you had everything under the sun with white papers, with USB sticks, with hats, with like basically everything possible under the sun. And we know how that worked out. Like, how many coins from 2014 are
hundreds, still, if not thousands? Yeah.
And how many do people still know, right, and trade?
A few dozen. Maybe. Yeah. So many died. So yeah, if we kind of continue with your story, because I think some people, won't know about you. So you got in quite early. You're buying Bitcoin, then Dogecoin, and all these other altcoins. You try OKCoin futures, and this is where you start to get this idea that you can not only go long, but also when the price goes down, you can short and make money.
Yeah. So basically, I made, I don't want to say that I made a lot of money, because it's compared to what some of the, what people understand right now by a lot of money, it was like peanuts.
Right.
But
it was a lot of money at the time. It's all relative. So
it's all, I mean, it was a lot of money. I always came from, like, if you look on Twitter, is the there is that meme of like the generational poverty.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, well, basically I'm that guy. I mean, I came from like a very poor family. I had to work since I was like 14, 15. You know?
Do you mind saying where you're from? Or the country?
I'm from Romania. I'm Eastern European.
That's right. I remember because one of your last tweets was like Merry Christmas from bumfuck Romania or something like this.
Yeah.
So, sad times, man. I'm very glad you're back, by the way.
Well, we can talk about that, because that's more relative. But I mean, I came from like I said, I came from a poor family, and for me, though, those amount of money, which was not much. I mean, To be honest, it's not even like the price of a nice car.
Okay.
No, let's go with like that.
Yeah.
But for me personally, it was like, oh man, I can go into a store and I can buy whatever I want. I mean, yeah, it was pretty lame. I was also a bit younger. I was like 24, 25. For me, it actually it was a lot.
Yeah, I mean
While
that's it, it's all, as I was saying before, it's all relative. When I was trading in 2013, I was still at school, and a lot of money for me was, you know, the bar was a lot lower. But I
yeah.
remember, yeah, very similar situation. But as long as I think you get that feeling like you've accomplished something and you've made an amount of money you wouldn't normally be able to make, depending on your country or age or whatever, like that's still a beautiful thing. No matter if to someone else, you know, it's not a lot of money, who cares?
Yeah. And basically the way things went was I caught the altcoin cycle back then. And trust me, it was insane. We can talk about it for days. The amount of scams, backroom dealings, exchanges. Right now you have coins that pull the rug. I saw this expression on
Yes,
Twitter.
the rug
Some
pull.
token pulled the rug. Well, back then there were exchanges that pulled
That's
the
so funny. I can remember when I started trading, that was definitely a thing that was in the back of your mind, that any second the exchange you're trading on will just shut off and run away with all the funds. And that was a very common occurrence. 100%,
Oh
man.
man, oh man. I've lost so much myself. It was MintPal, CryptoRush. There was another exchange where I traded the Karma coin. Forgot its name. Whatever. But so there was some Poloniex. Oh man, that was brutal. The old school Poloniex when they had the problems. I'm not sure what they're doing right now, if they're still around.
Yeah, well,
But
they were almost fading into irrelevance. They got sold to Circle, and then they got bought out by the Tron guy. I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but they're kind of making a bit of a comeback at the moment, growing slowly but surely. But they're definitely not the venue they used to be. I think
No.
Binance is king now for altcoins.
Yeah, Binance is king. So basically it was the fact that an exchange, like, people don't understand back in the day how insecure things were. Because I actually posted this on Twitter saying that, okay, look, back in the day a lot of people had either USD or had the coin, which was mostly either, because everybody was converting to majors. This is what people don't understand. Like, back in those days, hard currency was king, then came Bitcoin, and then came means to acquire more Bitcoin, which later get converted to hard currency. So the outlook for future was like, let's make USD. So back then, when the exchange got hacked and the wallets were emptied out, so to speak, there weren't that many wallets to empty out. Like, you took the Bitcoin, you took the Litecoin,
Ripple,
and you took
maybe.
a few other coins, and nobody could trace you. Compared to right now, when the vast amount of money in Bitcoin is not actually in Bitcoin, it's in all the contracts and derivatives and futures and whatever.
Right. You can't steal the derivatives.
Yeah, like you can't steal a CFD.
Yeah, that's actually a very good point.
So if back then was like 50% Bitcoin, 30% altcoin, 20% USD, now you have like 5% Bitcoin, 40% Bitcoin derivatives, 20% stable coins, which can easily be locked or tracked, because you've seen the KuCoin, Ku exchange.
Q coin.
Yeah. So basically the USD was, all the stable coins were shut down from the server. Decentralized finance. Oh, we can shut it down. Such decentralization. I am impressed.
That's a good point. I think this is why, at least with DAI, well, I mean, theoretically, maybe with DAI you could do something like this if the MakerDAO token holders wanted to, but I think as a baseline with DAI, this is a lot harder to do. So that's one benefit of DAI over the other ones. But you do raise a good point. It's all good and well for the platform to be supposedly decentralized and non-custodial, but if the, you know, if the king currencies are all these stable coins that are issued by central entities, then, you know,
Yeah,
the thing's
so
very
basically,
vulnerable.
from the amount of money that was stolen, like more than half of it was locked down. Remember when you can like steal Bitcoin, put it through a few mixers, wait a year or something, and then basically sell it on local Bitcoins or whatever to launder it. Even if you're going on a KYC verified exchange. So if you wait long enough, and if you use enough mixers to change the system, you can actually go from thief to legit trader, legit in quotes, but legit trader, you know? Right now you can't do that. I mean, you can easily get tracked. Most of your assets can lock down. You can't steal most of the assets, which might be good because fewer exchanges can rug pull. The environment is totally different right now when it comes to the market allocation of where the money really is.
Yeah, we're kind of detouring here a little bit, but
Yeah,
this is
sorry, man.
interesting. No, it's good, it's good. While I think of it, actually, one question I have is, given that you took some time away, we'll go back into that soon, but are you surprised to see that Bitcoin is still relatively dominant?
No, I'm not surprised. I mean, I actually spoke and I actually thought of this back in the day. So I was like, either Bitcoin goes to zero or Bitcoin uses its first mover advantage to go to infinity. So it's either zero or infinity, which is lower. I mean, which is more profitable. So, and if I actually implemented this thought, rather than be a stupid person, right now I would be chill on a yacht.
Okay, so that's a very good point, and that brings us back to where we kind of left off from your story before. I think the next kind of question, you can explain what led up to you leaving trading or taking a break at least, and why you decided to leave.
Man, the idea is as follows. I did almost all the mistakes that you can possibly do as a trader, and not enough people are talking about it. And this is something very important, both for the health of the ecosystem and the people in it, and also for the general welfare, to speak, of the entire market. So the first mistake that I did was that I traded my rent money. Remember when I said I was coming from a poor family, and basically I was doing trading 24/7, which was actually almost 24/7. It was the scheduling was insane. I was always trading my rent money for the next not the next month, the month after the next month, if that makes sense. So there is always that huge pressure and that huge stress involved of always trying to make a trade. And that is bad because you jump into things, you jump into setups. You are since you are forced to make money, you're forced
You
to
can't take a break.
Yeah, you can't take a break, and you're forced into setups that are not proper setups. So if you're like a person who doesn't really eat from the money that he's making, so to speak, or he's not actually eating the next meal out of it. So basically, you look at it over year period. You can choose setups that are like, okay, this setup is 80% secure, or 70% secure, or 90% secure. You know, you can choose setups that are more clear. But if you are forced to trade every single day, you don't have this luxury. So you trade setups that are 60-40, 55-45, which is, if overall in the long term, even if you go, okay, if I have a 5% edge on a long enough scale, you're profitable. The problem is, if you add that and you add the fact that you are not afford to have a drawdown and you're not afford to take big losses, you can easily get into a good setup, enter it, have the market go a bit against you, panic, close, and then see the market go where you saw it going originally. And this also has to do with the amount of leverage used and the amount of pain tolerance that you can support. So once you live off that money, you have very little pain tolerance. This is one thing that is killing everybody right now.
Yeah, that's an important point. And you mentioned before leverage as well, so were you using a lot of leverage?
Well, I was sticking to 10x, which is huge, huge. It offers very little pain tolerance. Extremely little. When back then, if you saw something move against you, $10, you were actually shitting bricks. For real. I mean, you were like, no. And right now, I'm seeing like 100x's and 50x's, and I'm like, man, no retail guy is gonna make it here. Like, no.
So what are some other mistakes? You kind of identified a couple there, but what are some other things that burnt you out initially, at least?
Position sizing—that's a huge one. Because again, since being forced to make money, you tend to trade. Since you are forced, because you live out of it, trying to trade, then you're trying to—you don't have a proper position and a proper drawdown on the account. In a volatile market back then, that could kill you. I mean, there were people who went not all in, but who were losing like 20% of their accounts in a trade. And man, you cannot, I mean, realistically speaking, you cannot sustain that.
You can do
Because
that 5 times.
you can do that 5 times, but remember, you lose 20 and now you have 80%. So to make those 20%, you don't need to make 20%. You need to make actually more than
25.
20%. Yeah,
Yeah,
you need to
it's
make like 25% out of 80 to get back to where you were at 100.
At what point did you go, I have to stop trading, or I've lost too much, or I'm not good at this, or I'm missing something? Was it like a small voice in your head that was telling you should probably pull back,
No,
or
man, my life actually went to shit, man,
really?
honestly. Yeah, I got super fat. I had problems with the family.
Man,
I
that's
had
rough.
the relationship problems, so to speak. I honestly think that looking at it right now and seeing where I'm now, I'm right now where I am, it's the good outcome, to speak. It's like on a minus 100 to plus 100, I'm like plus 60, if
That's
you know what
good.
I mean.
Well,
No, it,
I don't mean to get too personal here, but one of the things I wanted to ask you was, how things have been while you've been away, and it is good to hear that, you're happy with how things have worked out. I mean, that's usually
yeah.
how life is. We're
Yeah,
all learning, we're
I
on a
got a
journey.
steady job. I got a steady job. I started making money. I got married. I got older. I got wiser. And basically, like I said, I mean, my life, when I think about it, it's painful to see where I was. Good thing that I'm not a drinker. Good thing that I don't do drugs. I'm like totally against drugs. I only smoke some weed back in the day, but that's more or less legal nowadays, depending on your jurisdiction. Please no FBI. But yeah, I mean, I wasn't drinking. There were a lot of people who basically lost everything and then ended up pretty badly. So
Well, that's good, man. It sounds like you're definitely counting your blessings. That's the right way to think about
yeah,
life.
I really am. To be honest, I really am. I mean, crypto world can be cruel sometimes. I mean, you look on Twitter and on the crypto Twitter, and you see everybody is getting wrecked here, wrecked there, wrecked everywhere. and there is a lot of smack talking being thrown around. But yeah, I think I ended up in a pretty good position.
And so why did you decide to reactivate the account, or it was never deactivated, but re-log into the Twitter account and say hello again?
Well, I had to go to get past. I had like this blockage, mental blockage, you know. There were too many bad memories. I mean, I got scammed on the exchanges and I got my rug pulled. Okay. I got scams on altcoins and I got rug pulled. Okay. I got scammed on like so many possible things that could have happened. Like, okay. The thing that hurt me the most though is that I got scammed with my Ethereum. If the story is, I went in the Ethereum presale and basically it was going nowhere and I was like, oh, maybe it's time to get out of it, you know? And then some guy came and basically bamboozled me into giving him the keys, you know, at a very low price. It was like even lower than what the market was going for it, but it wasn't yet listed, so basically I got scammed. So like immediately after realizing, okay, look, so dude, I tried to talk with the guy. Hey man, look, here, let me give you back. I'm sorry, I didn't think this through. It was like nope. And basically, yeah, I got scammed for 10K Ethereum. So I could have actually chilled on a yacht. For real.
Yeah, that's rough, man. That's rough. But
Yeah, I'll never forget that guy.
there are so many stories like this for people who got early. I mean, if you started trading at the same time you did, then the amount of people who started then and don't have some good stories about getting ripped off is so low. It's unfortunate, but yeah, that's definitely a pretty rough one. But as I said before, man, it was actually a very pleasant surprise to see some tweets from you. When I first saw you back on Twitter, I thought, oh, someone's hacked into his account, or it's someone who's like created a fake account. And I was like, oh no, it really is you. And then you were tweeting some stuff, making comparisons to the past and how things are now, and kind of warning people. And I thought, this is actually a nice voice to have back in the space. And I could actually tell as well that you'd clearly, gotten older and wiser, as you said as well. You can actually see it a bit in the tone of your tweets. So, generally speaking, though, what would you say are some really big differences in the crypto space now, and even just crypto Twitter space? Like, how differences in terms of how people act and how people think and what the platforms look like.
Back in the day, it was very wild westy, but it was wild westy because it was run by people, not by machines. So if you're long enough on crypto Twitter, you start to notice the OGs, you know, the old people. I don't want to give names because I don't want to be an asshole, and but basically everybody that was. Or not everybody, but 90% of the OGs that are still active on Twitter, all of them, let's just say they don't have to work for bread anymore. You know, let's put it like that. Back then, you knew exactly, okay, this guy can do it, this guy can do it. Like, people were getting together into their groups and was like, dude, I have 5 million bucks. I want to buy Bitcoin. I want to. And if you were in that group, you can. Dude, if you buy is 5 million bucks, this price is gonna go like 30 bucks. So, oh, let's see, what is the liquidation on 10x on OKCoin? 30 bucks. So I buy here, I close into the liquidation walls that appear there. Free money. And you knew the guys. I mean, you knew the people. You know, it's like that guy or the other guy, you know? But you had a name. What changed is that the bots came. The bots. The bots. The robots. And the trading desks. Because if you know me, you know man, if somebody if some guy, let's say if I'm making like 1 million bucks, okay? I'm gonna go on Twitter and say yeah money, etc., etc., you know? Like very energetic, you know? But if like Some guy sitting in his all tied up business suit looking at his Bloomberg terminal or something. Oh, $1 million. How quick I can get 1% out of it as a bonus. Oh,
Right.
I buy a new watch. It's amazing. Oh my God, I can't believe it. Oh, the excitement is real. Let me go, whatever. Have a Starbucks coffee. You know? And that's exactly that's what happened. The robots came, and 10 you started to not see that many people who make it, because the market was covered, was cornered either by people that came from the finance world, which for them, oh, I make a few million, how quaint, or people that are trading desk, which don't trade their own account but trade the company's account, which again, oh, I made some company some money. Maybe I can get a nice bonus at the end of the year. And you don't see that anymore. I mean, if you look at the amount of people, and this is only observational, this is not like, oh, this is hard data, but if you look at it,
No, I think you're definitely right. The amount of professional actors, you could say, have come into the space, the amount of automated trading that happens now is a lot higher. Say when I first started trading, I did a lot of arbitrage just manually with the futures. And the only reason I was able to do that was because things just moved so slowly.
you had an in, you had an edge, you had a market. Right now, everything is bots, and with the decentralized tokens, which, I mean, you don't need even to be on like a different exchange. You can do so many crazy things right now. It's insane. But it's all taken by the robot. I mean, look at Uniswap. Uniswap has this built-in automatic market maker, which hooks into the Ethereum chain, which hooks into the other DeFis, which you can switch money around very easily, and basically you just arbitrage is instant.
Well, yeah, I agree with you mostly there, but I would say that the whole DeFi space, I know it's not exactly like the altcoin stuff years, like half a decade ago, but I think it is relatively close. The whole DeFi thing for me really reminds me of the Wild West days, but even already it's starting to get pretty professionalized, and it was never as crazy as the original crypto stuff,
Yeah,
but it is a bit refreshing.
and with the fact that it's getting so professionalized, how you said it, it's more difficult. And I won't say it's impossible, because you can always find an edge, especially if you're like low value. If you don't, it's one thing to put $1 million into something, and it's one thing to put $1,000 into something. Like the slippage is different. I mean, this is not rocket science. I'm not. It's more mathematical to say, and it's less excessive, because most people, the way I see it, most traders back in the day made money by feels, by trading on feelings and by exploiting feelings rather than by mathematical formulas. So there was this hype created on something, everybody jumped in because of the hype, support, resistance, nothing matters. You're like, is this hyped? Look on Twitter, look on how many mentions it gets. Look at if people are talking about it. You know, like the Dogecoin thing with the TikTok recently. Like, if you want to trade Dogecoin based on the TikTok references, just look at how many mentions it's getting and trade, like, plot mentions on chart.
But I do still feel that it's definitely not as easy as it was back in the day to make a lot of money very quickly, just as a, you know, an everyday person, no matter what your background is. But I think it's not like there's easier alternatives in other places. You know, the stock market is also similarly math driven, and every year it becomes more and more bogged down in like predictable stuff. The kind
Yes,
of
but remember one thing: if everybody believes a line to be true, then everybody will respect that line. And in the stock market, if everybody's believing that that support line will hold no matter what, that support line will hold no matter what. Especially when you add the slight dose of quantity easing, courtesy of the American government. But that's the thing. I mean, most traders trade on the difference between the fields, like the regular guys, you know? That's how we used to do it. How does it not necessarily feel it, less mathematic,
More intuition.
more intuition. And you could have traded the spread. The spread was big enough that you could have traded it. So basically you start going when the fields are going high and you exit while when the things appears to be petering off. And the spread between these two points was pretty huge. Now with all the robots in it, that spread is getting very close. And there is another important thing here. The price of the Bitcoin is too high. It's honestly is
As
it
in it,
attracts a different kind of audience.
right,
If
it's too high for someone who's just getting started to make it worth
yes.
their time.
Exactly. So people hate most people, regular people, let's go it like this. Regular people hate decimals.
That's
Regular
true.
people hate even like you have $1.50. I'm like, oh my God, can't you like make it $2 or something? Like why do I have to carry coins? And there is this inbuilt distaste for fractional systems. Like people want to see round numbers. Round numbers are good, are round, are happy.
Do you think it would be bullish for Bitcoin if they did some kind of stock split?
Oh yes, oh yes, oh yes, yes. If they do that, it's gonna go to the freaking moon, man. I'm telling you. If they do like a 20-to-1 stock split, or 30-to-1, or even 100-to-1 stock split, Bitcoin, like if you hold a Bitcoin, man, it's gonna go to the moon so hard. I mean, there is an old Dogecoin song about going to the moon. I'll send it to you on Twitter. It's basically that. I mean, honestly, the thing is, the way I see it, I mean, I could be wrong. I could be an idiot. I mean, I actually failed trading a few times, so maybe I actually am an idiot.
I think you're right. I love this question because a lot of people who are obviously doing a stock split doesn't change anything fundamentally. It's still like from a fundamentals point of view, it's still the same company, or it's still the same cryptocurrency, it's still the same whatever. Doing a
Yes,
stock
but
split does
perception.
exactly, and see, I go like, I'm happy just to accept that these things like perception actually matter, and this is part of how people decide how to price things. But some people who are very fundamentals driven get very annoyed at the idea that actually doing something like this could be a good idea.
The general idea is, look, regular guy comes into crypto, okay? And he basically looks at, I don't know, insert financial TV program that you have in your country. We don't have any because we're backwards, but that's okay. Living in the sticks sometimes has some benefits. We don't have riots, which, yay.
That's nice.
But so you look at the whatever financial program you have. And you go like, oh, crypto is pretty cool. Okay, let's go in. And what is the biggest crypto? And naturally, it's Bitcoin. Okay, first mover advantage, was first on the market, etc. And you look at the price and you go, oh shit, this is more than my car. Maybe I'll go buy some stock that is cheaper. They go like, oh, I can buy 0.001. What does that even mean? Is it one? Is it a cent of one? Like how what?
And it's just not satisfying paying all that money to get a fraction. It
Exactly.
feels stupid if you don't know any better.
And imagine that. Imagine going, okay, so I bought a fraction of this, and then I'm gonna go put it on an exchange. And I'm gonna trade it after I spend almost a car on it. That sounds something that regular person would do. No, of course not. Come on, man. Are you retarded? Like, no. They'll go. They look at it and they'll go like, "Holy shit, this is expensive." and then walk away.
So since you came back on Twitter, have you actually been trading, or are you just kind of providing a bit of commentary?
No, trading is relative. I'm not. There is a difference between day trading and investing. So look, I bought some unit. I think that's pretty clear. Like full disclosure, I bought some uni, like not that much.
Yeah,
a few hundred worth. Okay, but I didn't buy them to flip them the next day. I bought them because, like I said, the first DEX protocol, whatever you want to call it, it's highly complicated. It does something that allows you to own their tokens, and you get a percentage of the fees traded on that exchange. Actually get a percentage of the fees.
It's a great idea, because if you look back over all the years of crypto, I think you would agree that the real winners are the exchanges, because they make money whether the price goes up or down or side or not sideways. They make less money when it goes sideways, but you get the idea. They're constantly making money.
They make more money when it goes sideways, because everybody gets in and out quickly.
You might be right there. I always think that volatility is what, because it increases volumes.
No. The only thing they make money in volatile environments, if they skim up off the leverage and the liquidations.
You think
because,
so?
Because I don't want to say names, but back in the day, there were some exchanges that... oh, you got liquidated. Let's take your position and flip it on the bounce 5 minutes after for some little money. Okay, go in. Yeah.
Do you think that you were saying before that the average trader is more professionalized now than they were back when you started off? Do you think that the exchanges, generally speaking, are better?
Man, the exchanges are better tooled, if that makes sense. They offer more products. So the thing with the exchanges is they offer more products, because right now, I mean, you have FTX where you have like 100x leverage and you have like the 3x bear bull tokens. Like it's all of these crazy products that didn't exist back in the day.
Yeah.
Now, would those exchanges be actually more fair and not engage in crazy backroom deal shenanigans? Well, I wouldn't bet money on it, to be honest. I mean, people do not really change. Even if the exchanges change, the people running them. Oh, we can skim some money of it. Would anybody find out? Maybe not.
Do you miss any of the old platforms that aren't around anymore at all?
Not really. They were all lag-infested shitholes, to be honest. It's good. To be honest, speaking from the platform size, like, to be honest, the it's not only the platforms, it's also the tooling. I mean, I remember back when TradingView allowed you to chart altcoin exchanges.
Yeah. Yes.
And it was like, oh my god, this is insane. And now, I look at the software solutions behind it, and I'm actually highly impressed on what CryptoWatch did. Shout out to CryptoWatch. They don't pay me, but they should. But I'm actually really impressed. They actually kept their product running.
Yeah, yeah. What are some other platforms that, you know, have stood the test of time that you really like?
Man, I like Bitstamp. They have high fees. They're killing it on fees. But they're still there. That needs to say something.
Yeah.
And as far as I know, they weren't involved in too many scandals.
Right.
And I mean, Bitfinex had that entire thing with the guys that did something. I can't remember, but there was like a big hoo-ha. Some money was stolen. They got their own token.
Yeah. They issued the Bitfinex debt tokens.
Is that thing still around?
No, I think it's all done now. You could convert them into equity, or you could sell them on the market, and they've all been well and truly redeemed now. Yeah, for a long time.
So, So basically, like, Bitstamp is It's the old exchange. It's the old people exchange. It's doesn't allow you too much. I don't think it allows you leverage, to be honest.
Yeah, they just do spot if I recall correctly, yeah.
Well, I'm trading on it, so I should probably know, but
So
to be honest,
and
since I'm staying away from leverage, I didn't actually care too much, so. But it's still there. I mean, after all these years, it's still there. And if you look at the volume, it's not low. I mean, it's there.
Yeah,
It's
it's decent. And
decent.
are you still bullish on crypto in general?
I am extremely bullish on crypto because crypto right now, I think it's like how the internet was in 2007, before the big web 2.0. But the
Boom.
problem is crypto has two main problems right now, in my opinion. One, it's highly algorithmical and it's highly robot based. And secondly, the gateway is too damn high. The price is too damn high. The price of the gateway equity is too damn high.
Yeah.
So basically, it cleans up everybody who gets in while simultaneously making it hard for people to actually get into trading. I'm not saying about okay, I have my there are credit card services that allow you to buy Bitcoin and hold them. There is one. God damn it, I
Like
forgot
a
about the name.
roundup service.
Yeah, like a roundup service. There are a few. There is one in my country also. Is Revolut.
Revolut, right.
Revolut. Yeah. You have that, but. So you have this sort of entry, like okay, let's dump. They offer you some sort of crypto wallet. Let's dump some money into it, you know, which is great. I mean, from a regular guy, it's great, but the money is not rolled into the market. It's just set into the market. It's like quantitative easing, but with more steps. So you have buy pressure coming in from one side, which does not sell it. Or rarely sells it. And then
Yeah.
you have all the big brokers.
I never thought about it like that, but that's a good way of putting it. It's QE for crypto.
Yeah, it's QE for crypto because you have all of these roundup services or oh, you want to get into crypto but you can't afford it, you can just round up and they basically make a once a day, they get all the fees, make the payment at the rate and then equalize the balances. And oh, you wanna sell it? Oh, most people don't. Most people just have it. I mean, I have coworkers who have like you who use this system and have like 0.0 something. Like,
Yeah, it's a good way to start saving and investing in things. I know a lot of people use them to buy stocks as well. And it's kind of interesting, just going back to the last question about whether you're bullish, because I always thought for some reason that you were a bearish person on crypto, and the reason why earlier on you were shorting, I thought, was because you had a generally bearish attitude towards crypto. But it sounds like actually you've, ever since you've got into it, you've been fairly bullish on the whole thing. But you've taken, there were windows of time where you thought things were a bit excessive, as any good trader should, and you tried to capitalize on that, but it moved against you most times.
yeah, the reason I was bearish initially because I consider it to be the dot-com bubble, and that went straight to zero, most of it. Which, in all fairness, most of the altcoins went straight to zero. You couldn't short
Right. You sh
So
so
I was the idiot that shorted Google rather
that's
than
a
short Enron or something.
Right, that's a good analogy. I mean that's definitely fair.
Right now I'm extremely bullish, but crypto needs to find, in my opinion, it needs to find a way to make it more easier for people to get in. And the easiest way to make crypto to make people get in is if they feel that they're buying an entire unit worth of things. Like most people are accustomed to buying stocks. You can't buy half a stock. You either buy one action, how do you call it?
One share?
One share, exactly. You buy the one share or zero share. You can't buy half a share.
Yeah, or a
Because,
millionth of a share.
exactly. So, because people don't understand, they don't get this. I mean, stock market, I like telling people this, but if you've read the tales of a stock market operator, like the early stock market was in the same room where people were trading horse races.
Really?
So like the
The first
first
public share
yeah
market.
the first the first time, like back in the 1910s, 1918, 19s, back then, the bucket shops, where the local brokers, to speak, that were connected to the stock market in the stock exchange, those local shops were actually, okay, here you're trading stocks based on the tape and the telegram straight from New York. And 2 meters to the right, you are betting on horse races.
Wow.
For real. I mean, it's if you read the Tales of the Stock Market Operator, it's a good book.
Yeah, I've heard of this book, but I've not read it myself. So, would you say that you left crypto a few years ago and you've come back this year? Are things mostly what you thought? Where are we mostly where you thought we'd be? Or are you surprised at how things have turned out?
To be honest, I wouldn't say I'm that surprised. I mean, when I left, there were bots already started to take over. The crazy leverage already started to take over. BitMEX was already implemented, was already running, like
Launched
already,
yet?
yeah, it was already launched, and they were already offering the crazy leverage. I don't remember if they offered the 100x right from the start.
Yeah, it wasn't right from the beginning, but after the first year or two, they did that.
Yeah. And to be honest, I mean, look, if you want to day trade right now in 2020, you can either trade 100x on Bitcoin and get shafted badly, or you can go trade 100x on Forex, which is better because it respects patterns.
Well,
So,
I think the other thing about Forex is that people have been day trading Forex from times long before crypto. I think the ecosystem of tools and information you have is a lot more transparent and a lot easier to get into. I think it's potentially harder to make a fortune very quickly, but I think you're more likely to learn the skills to become a better trader by dabbling in Forex
yeah.
first.
It offers more success chances. The problem with crypto is open any exchange you want, any exchange you want. Switch it to an hourly or a 15-minute time frame, and it's not moving. It's not moving. And then you see like this huge candle that goes up $50, $100, or down $50, $100 in like a 2-minute or a 5-minute candle. Congratulations, you just got liquidated if you're on the wrong side of that particular candle that happened in those particular 2 minutes,
But
and you were sitting on 100x. Congratulations,
see
you got liquidated.
that's right, but I think it's also important to kind of emphasize that you said before, you know, if you want to be a day trader, if you want to be someone who trades for a living, then you know, crypto's pretty hard to come in at first. But I would say that if you're an investor and you just have some spare money, putting some money in crypto that you're just, you know, you put it's like the classic in crypto has been this idea of the hodler. I've always considered myself like that. Yes, maybe I don't sell when I should sell. Maybe I don't get, you know, like I don't play the waves well so I can make more money, but I just had a little bit of extra money that I earned after paying for everything I need. It's money that, you know, would have been put in a savings account or into stocks or away for a long time anyway. And I thought I'm young, I can have a go, put it into some cryptocurrencies I'm interested in and I like, and I'm not going to really be too upset if I lose that money. I think that is the lion's share of people. And I don't think, I mean, you see some of those people on Twitter and whatever who just like talking about cryptocurrencies, but most of the people you see on Twitter are these people who are trying to make it trading every day, and that's a different game from investing, yeah, as you were saying before.
Yeah, so that's why I'm saying, look, I posted something about Uniswap, and it's like right now it's it's trying to find the lower limit, let's say. But the thing is, they look at it, oh, if I buy this now, does it gonna pump to the moon? Bro, I don't know. Will it go to the moon in a 6-month interval? Well, if they do this and this, maybe yes.
Yeah.
But I don't know where in those 3 or 6 month time frame.
And you don't know what's going to happen in between. It could crash and could pump and crash, could do all these terrible things.
Yeah, it could crash. But do I look at it from, okay, look, in 6 months, where this is going to be?
Mm.
Like, I watched your previous episode with the Thinking USD guy.
Flood.
Yeah. He said something pretty interesting in regards to products that actually bring benefits to people, because there is a lot of when you're trying to see where you can park some money, you wanna see that the place where you're putting it has some future potential. It's not like a meme coin, like it's not small or rope, for example. He said something pretty interesting about Aave, and I actually look into it, and I'm like, wow, you can actually put your collateral and get leverage out of your existing collateral, so you don't have to sell. That's basically what FTX is doing, but in a more decentralized solution, as a more decentralized solution.
Yeah.
Because FTX allows you to leverage your account based on some existing assets. And I'm like, wow, this is like actually something that has a real world use.
Yes.
You hold X coin, you don't want to sell it because you believe it's going to go to the moon, but you saw something and you want to take advantage of it.
Mm.
What do you do? Well, you either go through Aave and basically dump the liquidity there, borrow against it, do your thing, come back, equalize the balance. Or you can go on, I don't know, FTX and pray that you can use that liquidity to buy, and that thing is traded on FTX, and you can basically equalize it like that.
Mm.
But it's a product that has theoretically and practically some real world use cases.
Would it be right to say that because DeFi really took off this year and brought some new interest in the space, is this also one of the reasons that you've taken more of an interest this year, or is it a coincidence?
No, to be honest, it's not really related to crypto. I'm a big politics fan. I saw some people that are hating it on Twitter, but I'm to be honest, I'm not really happy where the world is going, frankly. And basically, I was like, okay, let's see what other people are saying. Let's see what other people are doing.
Okay. So you didn't even reactivate the account necessarily to stay in the loop with crypto stuff. That was just a side effect.
No, that was like, I did that. And then I was like, man, I need to get over my, my mental block.
Yeah. And I'm glad, as I was saying before, you know, maybe some people might not like you for your opinions or whatever, but I'm just happy that, for me, I feel like a lot of people who got into crypto, it's been a big part of our life, and you're one of the people that was around at the start, and you're a funny character. You know, some of the things you've said and experienced, a lot of people know, you know, they know Ashdrake. That you came back, I think, is nice for a lot of people. I've got one last question I'd like to finish up with, because over this interview, I feel like we've gone over, you know, your past and the past of crypto, and now the current and the things you've learned. Where do you think things will be in, say, 10 years time?
Well, do I think things go from here? If Bitcoin manages to, I strongly doubt it's gonna do the entire stock split thingy that we talked about. So that's
maybe
if they do that,
you should start a movement the Bitcoin split movement, and you can champion it.
We know how that worked out with all the other BTC forks.
That's true. Yeah, it's a nightmare.
Yeah, so but I
Maybe if
mean,
we try to do a stock split with Bitcoin, all the infighting will crash the price so much that the effect will be the same. The price will go back to $100 or something, and then everyday people will be able to buy in. So we win either way.
we win either way, but I like when everybody's winning.
Yeah, of course.
Because if it there is a lot of negativity, man, honestly. It's like people only see I can win if I drag people down. And I was like that in the past. But I've growing wiser. Maybe it's also because I went into the political spectrum a bit, but I'm thinking that I can win more if everybody else is winning somewhat. Because from a real world analogy, I can be the richest man in the neighborhood, okay? But if the entire neighborhood is crime ridden, infested with crime and murders and whatever, then I can't leave the house. And my house will get broken into. Rather than, okay, everybody has some money, everybody is making some money, everything is peaceful, and I have just a little bit more than everybody else. So.
Well, it's funny you say this because one thing I often actually worry about with crypto is it has performed better than I ever imagined it could, even in like I'm a big believer in cryptocurrency. I think it's interesting. I think the technology is useful. So I believe that the prices will keep going up. But then I also go, you look around the world at the moment. And there's especially in developed, oh, I don't know if it's the same in undeveloped countries, but there's a lot of wealth inequality and stuff like this. And especially for young people, they see a future where it's going to be very hard for them to even just put a roof over their head. And I go, man, well, it's all good and well if we get rich because we bought some crypto early or something like this. But if you're going to live in a world where people resent you or you don't feel safe because there's so much inequality and tension in society, there's no point being wealthy. There's
No,
more
you're
to life
actually
than
a
that.
target. You're actually a target. And the thing is, this isn't like socialism or something. No, it's basically, look, you want to be in a place that allows everybody who works hard to succeed.
Fairness, a fair
A
society.
fair, it's more fair. I mean, look, you have a system where if people are not invested in their communities, they do not care about their communities. And you can look at New York. In New York, the property prices, okay, are so high that everybody is a renter. What that means is, since they don't own it, they don't invest into it. They don't invest into their properties. They don't, and basically, you see things just
They get
falling
run
down,
down.
no maintenance, run down. Exactly. This is bad for everybody. And you say, okay, but if I'm rich, I can move to another place, okay? Okay, that's your prerogative, but I count my success in people making it with me, not me at the expense of others, if that makes sense. And this is not really like, I'm a firm believer in capitalism. I'm a firm believer in the market forces. But some things, when the going is good for everybody, everybody is good. The problem is when it stop, when it stops being like that. And you see that, you see that. I mean, look, you have those riots in the America, and you see like the local shop getting burned to the ground. Who's gonna suffer from it? Will Amazon suffer? No, Amazon is actually profiting if the local city center burns down, because oh, this means I can sell more.
And only the strongest businesses will survive. All
Yeah,
the
only the
small
strongest.
shops, they're
Yeah,
the
like,
first ones to go.
if I were Amazon, I would actually pay the rioters to burn everything down. It's smart business decision. How much money I can get if everybody has to order through Amazon?
The like generational riots provide a once in a generation opportunity for a big company to take out all its competitors.
Exactly. And
So just to bring it back to the question, if you don't mind. I'm just curious, if you think about the future of crypto and where the world is going, where do you think crypto can fit in? Is crypto a good thing for society? Like, I know that's a big question, but I'm curious what you think.
The problem is like this. Crypto is not crypto anymore. Crypto went, I mean, look, Bitcoin, early days it was, oh, you can buy a coffee with Bitcoin. Now the fees are so damn high, the fees are more expensive than the coffee itself. So you can't buy a coffee with Bitcoin. Or, I mean, it's not worth it. The way I see the majors in crypto go, they go like the store of values that we have right now. So basically, Bitcoin will become like gold. Short story. Who will incentivize this? Well, people want to buy gold. Oh, Bitcoin does offer you a few more things, like the ability to, oh, I need to get out of the country because we have a communist insurrection here and nobody's protecting myself. Shit, I need to leave. Oh, good thing I have everything on my Bitcoin chain, so I can like pack everything and get the fuck out. Yeah, that's one thing, but it's not conducive to the entire general well-being of people. I mean, crypto itself was built to solve a problem, and this is what people are lacking. Crypto was made because for two reasons. One, Visa and MasterCard were fucking pains. I mean, the fees were so high, so they wanted an alternative. Secondly, was to have a way that you cannot reverse the transaction. So
Transactions,
if you
yeah.
make, and this is why crypto was made. Is the current price of Bitcoin conducive to immutability as a currency? Hell no. It's a store of value. Would Ethereum act like a currency with all the projects happening around it? Well, we've seen how high the gas prices went with the Uniswap thing. And well, Vitalik even came out and said that he's not. Well, there are some problems over there. So okay, we have Ethereum. Ethereum was supposed to solve. Look, if Ethereum didn't have all this ERC20 tokens, Ethereum would have went the way of the Litecoin. And well, we know how that went because Litecoin was supposed to be the silver to the Bitcoin's gold. So the real world use cases dictate products and dictate value. Right now, the main project I think that can actually offer Bitcoin to be like the most crypto space to be in the future to work well is the Solana chain, which offers extremely cheap transactions and it's based on a timestamp. So you get confirmations instantly. So it offers the benefits of Bitcoin and the blockchain, immutability,
It's funny you mention this because I'm a big fan of FTX and the Alameda guys just because they innovate so quickly and they're trying so many different things. And I've been meaning to look into Solana because obviously they're using it for Serum, and then you've got all these. I've had a few friends who've been trading for a long time, and they're saying that there's something actually different about Solana. It's actually a decent chain. So I haven't really looked into any of the, say Ethereum competitor type coins, but I probably should actually read about how Solana works because it seems they've figured something out.
yeah, they're trying to solve a problem. So the project, the thing is like this: there will be only one gold, which is Bitcoin. Everybody else who tries to compete with the gold, it's gonna fail on a long enough time frame. So you need a different use case, a different selling proposition. What is your
A
unique
different
selling
problem you're
proposition?
solving.
Yes, what is your unique selling proposition? So Ethereum was like, oh, look, we can do all these crazy things. Yeah, but it's expensive as shit. On a long enough time frame, it's not gonna go well unless they fix scaling. If they fix scaling and if they manage to allow you multiple transactions, then they're gonna use their second mover advantage and retain their market share, so to speak. But if not, there will be different blockchain solutions that will solve this. And the one that I saw right now is Solana, which offers their blocks based on timestamps. And the transaction fees are pretty small. But This is more of where the environment is going. You probably won't make money on Solana because Solana itself is designed to be cheap to transfer, as far as I understand it. So their entire proposition is, okay, our blockchain is cheap, our coins are cheap, our fees are cheap, and you can do whatever, you can run DEXs on it. I mean, look at what Project Serum does with their have they have order books, they have so many things that if you would run them on Ethereum, they would have been prohibitively expensive.
It's a really good point. And I think we'll have to finish up there. But this has been a really great interview. I hope you stick around on Twitter and in crypto because it sounds like you come from a humble background, but just having been around the space, you offer really interesting insights that I think people are going to
Yeah.
enjoy listening to, man. So thank you for making
I was a
the
bit of a I was a bit of an asshole back in the day,
time.
but I'm sorry about that. I'm still a bit of an asshole now, but in a different direction. Look, the idea is I want everybody or most people to actually get somewhere. I count my success in how many people I help, not necessarily in how much my bank account is. Because to be honest, after my experiences, life, you don't need the yacht to be happy. You don't. I mean, I have debt. I have a small house. I have a lovely wife. I'll probably have a kid soon, because well, I'm like 32. So there are other things in life that it's not all about get the Lambos, get the drug. You know, like once you go past a certain age, it's like, oh, here we go again, boys.
Well, I think that's a very good note to finish up on. Thank you so much again for coming onto the show.
And thank you for having me. I hope I didn't bore anybody. And if I did, well, I'm sorry, but such is life. Well, if you reached this line and you're bored, well, there is good thing. It's almost over, so you won.
Yeah, I think if you've made it this far and you're not enjoying the show, that's your problem, not ours.
We
No one's
already
forced to
took your
listen to
clicks. We already took your clicks.
the
We already took your ad revenue.
Oh, all right.